I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk with longtime Hoosier media personality Ken Beckley about his new novel, An Act of Frustration. Part thriller and part polemic, the novel tells the story of an Indiana small businessman who seeks to change this country's political system and pays a horrible price in the process. We'll talk with the author about the book and why he wrote it. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today with longtime Indiana media personality, one might even argue Indiana media legend, Ken Beckley, about his new book, An Act of Frustration. Ken, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John.
It's good to have you here. I'd like to also invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, Ken, I'm going to start. We're going to get into the specifics of the book, which is an interesting read. But I want to talk a little bit about what prompted you to start writing novels after, you know, with your media work. For so many years, you were working on the nonfiction side of the business and really not in print a whole heck of a lot.
That's right. And in fact, my entire adult professional life or lives had been writing from fact as a journalist and then in public relations and marketing, news releases, marketing brochures, speeches, and so forth. It had been sort of in the back of my mind as I was approaching retirement, my first retirement, I thought my last one, that...
Funny how that works, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I really thought I wanted to write fiction. I didn't know if I could because I'd only written from fact. I didn't know if I could create believable, lovable, or hated characters, and got some great advice from... James Alexander Tom. I don't know if you know Jim or not.
Yeah, and actually he's been a guest on this show a couple of times.
Well, he gave me some great advice on creating characters, and I don't know, the first book I started, I gave myself 5 years to write it. It took two, and it was about approximately 350 pages, and it just flowed. It just flowed out of my mind. I mean, I knew the beginning, I knew the ending. I didn't know that vast middle part, but it came. And so as that was published in 2012, I had the idea about book number two, and I finally got started on it. And really, I did that because I'd gotten such great reaction from book number one. I mean, the readers were really, really nice about what they had to say, and that gave me confidence that I could go on and try another one.
What was the toughest thing about making the transition to writing fiction?
Oh, I think the toughest thing is that you're making virtually everything up. Now, what was surprising to me in writing fiction is that there is an enormous amount of fact in the fictional story that I created. Well, both of them, actually. And so I spent a great deal of time every day when I would write. I was, you know, I had this habit where I got up every morning at 6. I started writing at 6:30. I would quit at 11:30 every day without fail, as I said, for 2 years. But during some of that morning time, I also did a lot of online research because the first book took place in the 40s and 50s and 60s. And so, you know, it was important for me to describe exactly what type of cars they drove and clothing they wore and so forth. And that book called Knuckleball, mm-hmm. has a baseball theme in part in it. And so there are a lot of Major League Baseball statistics in it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the biggest surprise, was the amount of fact that I thought I needed to put into the fictional story to make it plausible.
Was doing the research fun?
Oh, yes. Something I've, of course, known for a long time as a journalist, you cannot trust a lot that's online. Mm-hmm. You have to be very careful, for example, with what is on Wikipedia. But you can get, for example, you could still go to Wikipedia. I did. And I could get some sense of what I was looking for, some sense as to what the answer was. In some cases, didn't have to be exact. And so I enjoyed the research, and I went to public libraries as well, by foot or, you know, car. I didn't do everything online.
Was it, in terms of making the transition, you say you wrote for about 5 hours every day by my
yes.
math.
Yes, yes.
11:30.
Right.
Was it difficult? I mean, having written a book, you know, and I write a lot of columns and I do a lot of other things, you use a different set of muscles just with something that long. Slipping into the voice and staying there for a while requires a fair amount of discipline.
It really does. I, fortunately, number one, never had writer's block.
Mm-hmm.
As I said a moment ago, I didn't know where what the body of my first novel was, how I was going to get from point A to point C, mm-hmm. but it worked out just fine. But I got into my characters, and I think that's what helps make them so believable. I would find myself getting into almost a, as they'd say in basketball, a zone.
Mm-hmm.
I'd get into a writing zone, and I would finish maybe talking about, whatever scene, and I would find myself, it was an emotional scene, I would find myself with tears in my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the writing was exhaustive because I just poured so much of my emotion into the characters and trying to build them. And so that often happened to me. And again, I think it's what made them such good characters, believable.
Is that where it starts with you? Is it with the character? Or because the answer is different for every writer. Some start with landscape, some start with a feeling, some start with character, some start with plot.
Well, mine started with plot. I had a main character in mind all mm-hmm. along. I mean, he's central to the first story. Well, and actually to the second one as well. And it was just that I wanted to write about people who were very, very believable people, the people that readers could identify with.
Mm-hmm.
I chose common small-town characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had no problem really developing those characters, but I started with plot and did outlining on paper, like a lot of writers do. The second one, not as much as I did the first one, but the first one is a much longer book.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to make certain that in my character development, I didn't use everybody that was a brunette or a blonde or, mm-hmm. you know, curly hair, whatever. That's one of the things that Jim Thom told me. He said, I met at his house one time, and I think maybe around 2008. And
it's quite a place, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Built it himself.
And he and Dark Rain are just wonderful people. And he said, from this moment forward, if you're going to develop characters, I want you to look at how every person you talk to, how they use their body, their faces, their eyes, their hands and shoulders and so forth in describing whatever it is they're describing, because you're going to have to do that in writing your book, writing your stories, developing your characters. And so I would do that. I made a lot of mental notes, but I also did a lot of file notes. Mm-hmm. So I had those idiosyncrasies, if you will, of some people that really stood out in my mind.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with longtime media personality Ken Beckley about his transition, he says, after several careers into being a novelist. We're going to be talking more specifically about his new book, An Act of Frustration. but we're talking about his writing career right now. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. The part of writing that always fascinates me is the revision piece when you look at it. You know, given that you're moving into sort of a new realm here, were there any blind alleys you walked down and realized, oh, nope, that's not going to work? I have to retrace and figure out how I want to go. Something that you just could not make, you know, it seemed like a good idea in your head, but you couldn't make it come alive on the page.
I did not have that happen in developing the story. However, it happened with the editor. Mm-hmm. It was a blind shot. I had no idea this was coming. I submitted my manuscript, and I expected to have it marked up, mm-hmm. terribly marked up, mm-hmm. Because it was my first attempt at writing fiction. And what I didn't expect is that this particular editor asked that I completely change the character from the who told the story. Mm-hmm. So I had written that in third person. Mm-hmm. And the editor just almost incensed, said it was a terrible decision, and it needed to be changed to first-person narrative, which threw me for a loop.
What was the reasoning?
Just felt that that particular story had to be told by my character, Davy Miller. And of course, I say, of course, a lot of people wouldn't know this, but you deal with your editors online. Mm-hmm. Everything's done online now, so there's no paper that you exchange. So the red marks that you used to get on a piece of paper are something else electronically. And the person, I mean, just threw out, just really marked it up and said, this is absurd, blah, blah, blah. And so I was crushed. I was mad. I was incensed, and after about, I guess, 3 days of just not doing anything, I finally decided, you know what? This person makes their living editing novels. Mm-hmm. Don't you think maybe you ought to listen to them? So I started in revising, and it took me, more than a month to change everything from they did this and he did that to we did this and I did that and so forth. And there I lost a lot of words because there were scenes in that novel that could have been told by a third person that a first person could not tell because there's no way he would have known those things.
So in terms of that, what was the most satisfying part about making the transition? I mean, obviously, you've enjoyed it because after you got the first one done, you turned around and wrote another one. So we got to assume some part of it was fun.
Oh, by far, the readers, the readers' comments, by far. I expected, friends, really good friends, would say, oh, Ken, that was a great book. I really liked that.
Yeah.
But people went far beyond that and described why they liked it. What it was that moved them. One man said, I owed him a box of Kleenex after he read it. That's what really was moving. In fact, I didn't write the first novel to be published as publicly available book. I wrote it to prove to Ken Beckley that he could write fiction. And so after I got finished with the manuscript and at the time I was submitting it to the publisher, I thought, I think this is pretty good. And right before that, and then that's when I hooked up with a publisher and took it from there and decided, yes, I do want to make this available and expecting to sell to a few friends, but it went a little better than that, so that was good.
Do you revisit the book at all? I mean, I remember talking with Kurt Vonnegut once, and he said, by the time you've worked on a novel and worked on it and rewritten it, done all the things, you're so sick of it that you really almost can't stand to open the covers again.
I have. I have looked back at sections of it just to remind myself about how I described certain scenes. So yes, I've done that, but one thing I didn't say in regard to the difficulties of working with an editor and so forth, I guess all authors are such a perfectionist. I am such a perfectionist that I was making changes in my copy all the way up to the day before publication, even though it already been through the editing process.
Yeah.
I still found things that I wanted to say differently,
a little bit better,
or maybe even found a misspelling or a punctuation that was out of place or not there at all.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with longtime Indiana media personality Ken Beckley about his books, most specifically his new novel, An Act of Frustration. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking with longtime Hoosier media personality Ken Beckley about his transition to being a novelist. We've been talking really about the transition to writing novels after, he says, after several other careers before that. We're going to talk specifically, though, about his new book, An Act of Frustration. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimitswfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. So let's talk now about An Act of Frustration, because it is, you know, as I said in the opening, it's part polemic, part thriller. You know, there's a political message there. I don't want to steal too much and deprive people of a reason to read the book. So I always try to leave these questions in the author's hands and sort of let you lay the plot out so that I'm not the one who gives away major secrets. If it's you,
shame on me.
Yeah,
right?
That's it. That's, you got no one to blame but yourself.
That's
at that
right.
Point. Yeah. So, if you would, could you talk about sort of the genesis of the book, and then we'll get into to what it says. I
think. Yes. First of all, for those who don't know, the book is a fictional story about the 2016 congressional elections. I purposely stayed away from the presidential election, and there's a reason for that, which I hope I'll remember to tell you. But I had the idea for this back in 2012. And the 2016 elections was not even a part of my thinking at that time. Mm-hmm. My thinking was this, that we as a society, as a country of voters, had been very, very frustrated for many years with Congress not being able to enact a lot of meaningful legislation. And, of course, we just heard this day after day, and people are quite upset with Congress and the president. And so I thought, could one person, or what if one person started a movement that really changed the country? Could that happen? And so just out of fun and not to cause anything to happen, and I really want to preface that, I didn't write this book to cause anything to happen. It is a very partisan book.
Mm-hmm.
So I created Charlie Simpson, small town hardware store owner, as you pointed out, in the small fictional county, southwestern Indiana, Hopewell County, which is the same county as my first book, mm-hmm. Knuckleball. And Charlie Simpson, as a small business owner, becomes so frustrated with the inaction of Congress that he rallies, if you will, three other small business people from his little town of Barkley. No, excuse me. This Barkley is my first book. This one is Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide to call a mass meeting of a countywide mass meeting of small business owners to discuss how to get their congressman defeated. Doesn't matter whether the congressman you know, happen to be Democratic. It doesn't matter whether Democrat or Republican. They just wanted him out of office because they felt they needed to do something to send a message. So at the countywide meeting, Charlie delivers a very impassioned speech, pounds on the lectern, has tears in his eyes, talks about the hardships being a small business owner and not getting any relief on needed legislation from Congress. What he did not expect was that someone in the audience recorded his speech and it went viral. Mm-hmm. And immediately swept the country. The story, as you know, was fueled by murder. This movement is fueled by murder and ends up in this enormous political revolution that takes place in the November 8th congressional elections.
So before we move on, since you left it dangling out there, why didn't you choose to focus on the presidential election?
Because I wanted Charlie to take a stand that said it doesn't really matter who's president. Congress runs the country. Mm-hmm. Nothing gets done without the Congress. It doesn't matter what the president wants. Now, this is not a plug for Trump or Clinton, or
Gary Johnson or Jill Steiner.
Right, or an aspersion. Yeah. It's just that Charlie believes that Congress runs the country.
Yeah,
and so I wanted to take it from that premise and therefore focus on the congressional election and not on the presidential. What I have the presidential candidates doing is something to try to soothe the voters to get them to vote for them. But it's kind of a side issue, really, in this book.
And while was there an element of calculation in that, too, in that while Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, you know, have high negatives and, you know, to oversimplify this, would be unlikely to be elected homecoming king and queen in any in any county in the country, probably. They're still doing better than Congress overall. I mean, Congress, there are communicable diseases that have higher public approval ratings than Congress does now. Was that part of it, is the fact that really Congress as an institution is viewed in such toxic terms, right?
Yes, now? That's very much a part of it. In fact, there are statistics in the book about the low rating of Congress. I just wanted to stay on that. And remember, I started thinking about this in 2012. I finished writing the book in 2014, long before there was even a Trump or a Hillary as you know, bona fide candidates even.
Yeah.
And so I finished it in 2015, and then it takes a year to finally get to press.
And in terms of, I mean, as I was reading it, I mean, it's in terms of the tone, it's sort of like this weird cross of, a Frank Capra movie with a little bit of Network and Howard Beale saying, yes, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And even a little bit, we've had the uprising, the Ross Perots, those folks who present themselves as citizen politician reformers, guys who want to come in, clean things up, and then disappear. How did you arrive at the tone? How did you arrive at the character of Charlie Simpson?
I wanted Charlie to be very believable, that any large city or small town person could identify with. Very hard worker. He came up from a very simple family. Struggling to make a profit. Had a big box, if you will, big box competitor in the hardware industry in his area, making things tougher for him. Taxes were killing him. And so I wanted him to, wanted people to feel that, and then for Charlie to rally his three friends, and then they, all of their, this large gathering of small business people, to all agree, yes, we're facing the same problems, and that we need to get what they wanted to do was have every member of Congress representative and senator, voted out of office. That really became the initial goal, but they only could influence one representative, obviously, in their district. But once it went viral and swept the country, then the prospect of a major overhaul in Congress became a possibility. And Charlie railed against not only the inaction, he questioned whether there should even be whether the two major political parties should be abolished. He was very much against, he thought it was unpatriotic for people to vote straight one party or the other. I mean, he questioned whether there should be party platforms. He said he thought they were worthless. And I think when people read it, they will have a strong feeling for maybe a lot of the feelings they have felt about Congress have all come together into this one book. And through this one character.
We've gotten an email comment from a listener named Susan, and if you'd like to reach out to us via email, you can find us at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can call us at 866-476-3881 or find us on social media. Susan says, congratulations to Ken on his new book and Life Reimagined, from management, marketing, PR, generous philanthropy to author. Bravo. Best wishes for your continued success, Susan.
Wow.
Yeah, that's got to feel good.
Yeah,
and the part, how much did your career in business inform? Because in some ways, while much of the action is directed toward Congress, I'll give a little bit. There is a bias or a presumption in favor of locally owned businesses rather than the big national chains. There is a very much of a Main Street versus Wall Street kind of feel to this. Your experience with working in business, how much of that informed what you wrote?
I think some of what I wrote about how Charlie operated his business and some of the problems he had with customers and some of the products he carried and so forth certainly carried over from my days in business at H.H. Gregg. But there was no attempt to not write about large businesses. I just wanted to focus on a small town in Indiana that didn't have any large businesses. And they were all feeling the pinch.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I wanted the focus to be. It was nothing to do with being anti-large business or not wanting to talk about large businesses.
Well, although it is a common complaint among small business people,
yes,
though, that there are some fairly predatory business practices that occur that they, at this stage, have little defense against. I mean, is part of your view that Congress and the federal government ought to be doing more? Like you make the point that in some places, online businesses aren't paying sales tax, which gives them a huge edge, and they can in effect almost extort discounted prices from wholesalers in order to give them a real edge over smaller competition. Is there a sense really that playing field ought to be leveled a little bit?
Well, when I decided to concentrate on small business and a small business owner and then owners, I sought out small business owners and to find out what are the problems that you have. What is it you wish Congress could do for you? I did a tremendous amount of online research in that regard as well. And I came up with about a dozen pretty strong subjects. Business tax, they feel that business taxes are fairly unfairly weighted against the small business owner. Health care for the businesses of, a few employees is very, very difficult at affordable prices. and so forth. So I found those issues, even immigration. You know, some wanted to hire some immigrants, but they needed to know, do they have to be legal or not?
Mm-hmm.
Could they actually be illegal and still be hireable? And so that type of thing. And I developed that list, and so I just concentrated on that as a theme as they were espousing what their problems were and what they wanted changed by Congress, what made them mad that wasn't getting done. And so that's just became my focus.
How long did it take you to do the research on that?
Well, from the time I started on the book, I actually researched and wrote at the same time. I didn't research and then start writing because I knew how I wanted it to start. It took 1 year. It took 1 year to write this book. But this book is a 2 to 4 hour read versus my first book, which was over triple the size of this
just,
one.
It's just slightly more than 100 pages.
Yes,
so it's,
yes.
And it's It's a fast, breezy read.
Yes. And that's another thing. I wanted, in both of my books, I wanted to write in a way that people weren't constantly going to their dictionary.
Yeah.
What's that word? And then they lose the pace of the story and so forth. So readers will find it a simple read.
How about the other piece of it, though? Because we've talked about the polemic piece, but there is this kind of thriller aspect, and I don't want to give away too much of that. How did you decide to come, to sort of marry those two genres together?
I was concerned in writing this story that perhaps this going viral of Charlie's impassioned speech and then similar movements starting in the country would only go so far. And I wanted there to also be some mystery aspect, a kind of a second story, if you will, going on in the book. And there is, I'll say this, there is an assault scene in the book involving a woman. And so that started a secondary story, if you will, in the book. And I wanted that to be a kind of an ongoing part of this. And it turns out, as you know, the elements all come together. But I wanted something else, and what happened then actually added fuel to that movement and made it really strong by November the 8th. And that, I think, that unfortunate incident really caused things to turn in favor of the anti-incumbent movement. This, as Charlie points out, this is not an anti-Congress effort because of the importance of Congress. It's an anti-incumbent effort.
Yeah, it's a, throw all the out, basically, kind of.
Throw the bums out.
Throw the bums out. And you take pains in the book to say it's nonpartisan, that we don't really care. We just want to, we're sick of this deck. We want a new one here.
Yes.
We want to play.
Yes.
In terms of the writing, how hard was it to sort of not make it an essay, to be telling a story rather than simply arguing a point?
It wasn't difficult. I mean, I knew from the beginning that I wanted characters to bring this through, bring out the story. I wanted it to be told through characters and not just something that's, this is Ken Beckley's viewpoint. I could have written an essay very easily without characters. Of course, no one would have purchased it. But I just thought that going through using the characters that I did, that I could get across all the points that Charlie wanted to bring out. And wouldn't it be something it won't happen this November, but wouldn't it be something if there were a movement that resulted in some major changes someday?
If you are just joining us, we are talking with longtime Hoosier media personality Ken Beckley, who's made a transition after several careers to being a novelist. We're talking with him about his most recent novel, An Act of Frustration. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking with longtime legendary local media personality Ken Beckley about his transition to being a novelist. We've been talking about his most recent novel, An Act of Frustration. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So we've talked a bit. What's the reaction been to the book so far?
It's been, well, I don't know anything about sales yet. The publisher has not revealed to me any sales figures. But just the reaction, well, the people who have been kind enough to go into Amazon.com and rate the book, they've been very nice about that. And I've just got dozens of very, very nice emails from people, from readers, most of whom I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get my email address. And so I've been quite encouraged, as I was with the first novel, and I thank them very much for what they've had to say, encouraging me now to write number three.
Well, and we will get to that in a bit. But do they, when they respond to it, do they just respond to it as a story, or as are some of them seeing it as a call to action?
Oh, very much so the latter. In fact, one last week, I wish I'd brought it with me, but I won't forget part of the quote, and that was, "Every American should be forced to read it."
Forced to read it.
I thought, well, that's only 300 and some million sales, so that wouldn't be bad.
Well, yeah.
But yes, they've all said, you know, for example, you've got your pulse on the country, or we hope that something revolutionary takes place, although maybe not like this book turns out to be. But we hope that America's inspired to do something that they haven't done in a long time. So it's been more along that line versus, oh, just great writing or great character development and so forth.
Well, and if you, aside from, and I want to honor the spirit of your book and stay away from the partisan pieces of this.
Yeah.
But there were some elements even in the presidential race this year of both, you know, Donald Trump's candidacy and Bernie Sanders, that this system is not working. You know, it's time to kick the table over and start all over again. Did that make you feel like you were almost prescient, or?
Well, so I've heard from several readers who have said you gauged the mood of the country, or you wrote about this as though you had a premonition of what was coming. Mm-hmm. And I didn't at all. My goodness, not a bit. But when I have heard a lot of the comments on the campaign trail, I've gone, you know, yes, that's exactly what the book was talking about.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with Ken Beckley about his new novel, An Act of Frustration. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, as you say, the two books are set in the same fictional county and operate in kind of the same fictional universe. Is that your plan for all, you know, are you going to be like William Faulkner and write all of the books are set in, you know, what he called my native postage stamp, you know, where he created this entire fictional world? Or do you plan to go in a different direction? And is there a third book in the works?
There is a third book in the works in my mind, but not on paper yet. My third book will not take place in Hopewell County, and it might not take place in Indiana. I'm not certain yet, but I think I'm going to take a character from one of my books and and further develop that character. And I can't be any more specific than that.
Oh, so you're not going to give us the name of the character.
I don't want to give that
away. All right. Okay.
But it's going to be something totally different. It is not going to be about a small town anybody. It's going to be something entirely different. And I'm also, at the same time, wanting to write memoirs for my family. So I'm sort of torn, but I think maybe I can do both at the same time.
Do you still work with the same, you know, wake up at 6, start writing at 6:30 and go until 11? Or has you've obviously re-entered the workforce in other ways now?
Well, I did that for the two books, but I still get up early, you know, 6:37 every morning. It's early for me. And but no, I don't write currently. No, okay. but I've got to get started on the other.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Ken Beckley about his new novel. Caller, you're on the line.
My name is Virginia. This really brought tears to my eyes because my late husband, Richard, had small businesses here in Indianapolis, in fact. And it really is the hub. The small business is the hub of knowing what's going on in the communities. I want to know where we buy the book locally.
Good question. Thanks very much for the call and the question, Virginia.
You can purchase it at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or you can go to a Barnes & Noble store, and if they don't have it on the shelf, just ask them to order it for you.
When did the book come out? Was it?
It came out roughly April 1.
April 1.
So,
and were you trying to time it for the election cycle?
Well, as I was
or
getting...
Or did your publisher really want to time it for
yes.
the election cycle?
Yes, I did. January and February, the book was already at the publisher, and I was just urging that the system speed up as fast as it could because my goal was to have it come out by April 1, which it did. And so I'm very pleased that the publisher was able to meet that my deadline, not theirs.
When do you hope to have the next one completed?
Oh, my goodness. Maybe 2 years.
2 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe 2 years.
2 years. Well, we're going to take another call right now. Rev, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly.
I want to thank the author for pointing out that the House of Representatives is so important. It does have all legislative powers, powers of impeachment. And also, many people don't know, Article 3, Section 2, Congress can actually restrict the Supreme Court as to what it can rule on, quoting here, both as to law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress may make. That is to say that the Congress could actually ordain and declare that the Supreme Court cannot rule on abortion, for example, or gun ownership. Very, very powerful. You could have a Hitler or a Stalin as president and be virtually powerless. My complaint here is that I'm not in favor of this idea of term limits and throwing all the bums out so you get a whole another set of bums in. There's a passage in the Bible which talks about an unclean spirit goes out of a person, and then the place is cleaned and swept and made clean, and then it goes out, brings seven other spirits more evil than itself. They enter in and live there, and the last state of the person is worse than the first. And I think that the problem here is that we're not talking about any kind of focus or ideology or measurement that you can make on the person that's in office. And so you really don't know where you're going. Anyway, there you go. I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Ken.
Yes, well, points are well taken. In this particular case, the people who wanted the Congress congressmen and women defeated based all of that on the fact that Congress was not getting meaningful legislation or enough of it approved, particularly that has to deal with the small business people, but more than that. And so that was their focus.
Was that one of the primary things you wanted to accomplish with the book is to sort of remind people, because we do focus a tremendous amount of attention on the presidential race, And, of course, both presidential candidates have said, you know, one of the reasons that Americans should vote for them is because of the Supreme Court appointments. But as Rev points out, you know, Congress can impeach and remove from office the president. Congress can impeach and remove from office members of the court. Generally, you know, the individual or the party that has the power to fire someone is the one who is in charge. Neither the president nor the court can remove members of Congress.
Yes. It was not an intent at the very beginning when I started. The only intent I had, and this one is where it's a bit of a personal philosophy of mine that came out in the book. The rest of it I just let happen. I'll follow up on that. I do also, and that's therefore came out in Charlie's character. I believe that Congress does run the country, mm-hmm. and we have learned that a president can get us into trouble, such as, and I'll go, and I'm really not trying to get real political here because I'm not a political person.
Oh, yeah, I think we can find examples of Democrats and Republicans who've done stupid things.
But George Bush and the weapons of mass destruction and so forth, and so we got into that war, whether we should have been there or not. I'm not going to go into that.
Well, we can go back to Lyndon Johnson. If we want to balance it, Lyndon Johnson and the Gulf of Tonkin resolution.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And so I wanted that to come out in the book. But the other things, such as Charlie challenging whether there should be political parties, whether there should be platforms, whether there should be straight-line voting and so forth, I just let that happen. I just threw those out. I thought, what are all the sort of sacred things out there that partisan politicians or people who are very Democratic or Republican, or just flat believe very, very strongly in the system, what is it that might challenge some of their most sacred beliefs? And so I put that in there, and I thought that was, to me, kind of fun, if you will.
I've gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Gary. If you'd like to find us on Facebook, we're at No Limits, WFYI. Gary says, question about the business or economics of the book. How much of the overwhelming successes of certain books have to do with a distributor? Example, exclusively right of Walmart or Amazon, if they're marketed through there.
Well, I think your best chance to get a massive amount of sales is to go through a publisher who just takes it and runs with it. These are both ended up being self-published. Mm. And so the first publisher that I used did a great deal of marketing for me.
Mm-hmm.
The second publisher that I've used, I've been responsible for all the marketing of it. But being a marketing professional, it gives me a leg up on a lot of, well, maybe on most authors who self-publish. But if you can, I mean, your greatest chances are to be with a publisher of traditional works. And I just think about Michael Corita. He's a friend of mine. He's mm-hmm. a well-known novelist, lives in Bloomington. Just last week came out with I think it's his 13th novel. And I was noticing yesterday on Amazon.com that already he's, I believe, in the top 10 of sales.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's got a publisher. He's well-known. And just the fact it's Michael Corita or it's Dean Cruz or it's mm-hmm. it's any of the major names, they just – Grisham. Mm-hmm. They come out with a book, and before anybody knows anything about it, whether it's any good, it sells very well. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you got to do. In my case or in any people similar to me, you have to get that one major break, mm-hmm. in effect a national break, such as a national columnist review or a book reviewer's review and so forth. And then you get a lot of sales and things take off for your next book.
But again, to sort of follow up in the spirit uh-huh. of Gary's question here, it is really, really hard to make a living writing books. I mean, as I understand it, the Authors Guild says there are 600,000 published authors in the United States and Canada, and only 3,000 of them don't have day jobs. So,
yes, that's right. Unless you are an established author with a very big publishing house, it's quite difficult. You cannot self-publish and make a living. There's no way. You have to write because you love writing. I miss it. I miss it terribly. And that's why I'm anxious to get back on my next book or my memoirs. But you have to hit it. Now, some self-published authors, they have done it. They have hit big. And so now they're doing okay. But to really make it, you've got to go with a major publisher.
Was it hard finding your publisher?
No, not in self-publishing. It was not. You have to just decide who you're comfortable working with. The reason my book is at roughly 100 pages is that there was the possibility that it could be picked up by Kindle Singles, mm-hmm. which specializes in 30,000 words or less, and I felt my story told itself in, turns out to be, 29,000 and some words, and so it was the perfect size for Kindle Singles. They just didn't see the wisdom
of picking it up.
Had they, I could very likely have a good hit on my hand because they have such a following. And if they take a book, they then get behind the promotion of it, and that really helps set you up. But it didn't happen, and that's fine.
So you've already started thinking about the next novel and possibly memoirs. Can you give us a little bit of a taste of maybe what the theme would be of your next novel? I know you don't want to give too much of the plot or the characters away.
Yeah, and with it, I think I'm going to go the traditional publishing route and submit my manuscript to about 100 or 200 publishers and see if someone will bite and mm-hmm. take it, even if that takes 2 or 3 years, because not like an act of frustration where I really wanted it to get out before this political campaign. The next one, it won't be that way. It's going to be about a maverick college president.
Okay.
Go with that.
And there's not going to be, say, a model for that, 70 miles up the road on I-65.
Oh, no, it
here.
Is not. That's why I think
okay.
I'm not going to have
You're not going to go any further than
have
that?
Have a setting in Indiana.
Okay.
Right. And no doubt it will be a fictional college.
Well, I would like to thank you very, very much and wish you all sorts of success
thank you, John.
With the book. We have been talking with Ken Beckley about his new novel, An Act of Frustration. You can find it now at Amazon.com and in local bookstores. And my guess is if you find your way to him, he'll be happy to sign it for you, too.
Be happy to.
I'd also like to invite you to come back on Thursday when we're going to continue our conversation about Indiana's tragic addiction crisis. I'm John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.